So imagine trying to sell a brand new smartphone operating system to this massive multinational corporation.
Right.
And this company, they just spent 5 years and hundreds of millions of dollars training literally every single employee to use iPhones.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Exactly right. They've built all their security around it, their daily habits, everything. They are completely, totally locked in.
Right. The switching cost is just astronomically high.
It is. And that is the exact, almost impossible scenario we're unpacking today. So, welcome to this deep dive. We're so glad you're joining us.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
We've got this fascinating stack of internal strategy documents and pitch decks from a defense software startup called OpSpecs.
And their hardware project too, right? OpForge.
Yes, OpForge. And the mission for this deep dive is basically to deconstruct their Canadian competitive landscape.
Which is frankly a pretty wild space. It's a remarkable look inside the actual B2B machinery of the defense world.
It really is.
Yeah.
We're going to map out how OpSpecs' specific software features intersect with these billion-dollar industry giants. And, we'll analyze the procurement strategies you actually need to get a signature from a massive, entrenched bureaucracy.
Because in this industry, having a superior piece of code is what, maybe 10% of the battle?
If that, yeah.
The other 90% is just navigating the graveyard of procurement cycles.
Precisely. Now, before we get too deep into the weeds here, we really need to set some ground rules.
Definitely.
Because these internal startup sources, they deal directly with military software, tactical ops, defense spending. So we want to be incredibly clear upfront to you listening. We are looking at this purely from a technological and business strategy perspective.
Right, completely impartial.
Yes. We're not endorsing any military actions, any government's defense spending policies, or any political viewpoints whatsoever.
We're basically just looking at the chessboard, analyzing the strategies of the pieces without, cheering for any particular side.
Perfectly said. So let's look at the board itself. Because as you pointed out, you really can't understand a startup's product until you understand the brick wall they're trying to break through.
Right, the incumbents.
Yeah. And the documents refer to this existing landscape as the Tactical Awareness Fabric. And the baseline here in Canada is a system called ATAK. That's the Android Tactical Assault Kit.
Yeah, ATAK,
Mm.
which is essentially the digital nervous system for soldiers on the ground.
Right.
Under this program called the Integrated Soldier System Project, or ISSP.
Lots of acronyms today.
Always in this space, yeah. But under ISSP, the Canadian Armed Forces have been outfitting operators with literally Samsung S20 phones running this ATAK software.
So if you're listening to this on your commute right now or sitting at your desk, just picture the Maps app on your phone, but heavily militarized.
Exactly.
It shows blue dots for friendly forces, red dots for known adversaries. It allows for secure messaging.
And that brings us right back to that smartphone analogy you opened with. ATAK is what the soldiers are trained on. And more importantly, it's what the procurement officers have already purchased, already vetted, and distributed. The sunk cost is just massive.
It's like, think about the bloated software suite your own company might use right now.
Oh, don't remind me.
Right? Everyone complains about it, but if management just spent $10 million implementing it, they are not throwing it away just because some startup promises something slightly faster.
Definitely not. And ATAK is really just the baseline. When we look at the big training and simulation incumbents in Canada, the financial scale is just staggering.
It's huge. Just look at General Dynamics MS
Oh,
Canada.
yeah.
They hold a sustainment contract for the Canadian Army's command and control backbone,
Yeah.
the Land Command Support System.
Right. And just in December 2023, the government awarded them cumulative contracts worth up to $1.68 billion.
Wow.
And that is just to maintain and update the existing infrastructure, not even new stuff.
A $1.68 billion moat.
Yeah.
Good luck crossing that.
Exactly. And the walls only get higher from there. In the simulation space, the virtual training, you've got a powerhouse like BAE Systems.
Right, specifically their 1R business unit.
Yeah, which recently absorbed Bohemia Interactive Simulations. They make this product called VBS, Virtual Battle Space, and that holds the official digital virtual trainer contract for the Canadian Army.
And then for live physical training, out in the dirt, the documents highlight Cubic. They handle the live weapon effects
Which
simulation.
is the real heavy lifting hardware.
Right. They instrument the force-on-force training, laser emitters on the rifles, sensor harnesses on the actual soldiers, tracking kits on the vehicles, and they are locked into a 6-year contract.
So it's an incredibly saturated environment. And it's not even just the global defense conglomerates. The internal documents explicitly highlight a local, highly funded threat, too.
Oh, right, tactical.
Yeah, a Canadian company called Tactical. They build a product called Fulcrum, and they're backed by Calian Ventures, which is the investment arm of another major Canadian defense player.
Right.
And Tactical is actively marketing itself as building sensor-to-shooter data pipelines for the Canadian Armed Forces.
Okay, let's just pause here for a second, because if I am sitting in OpSpecs' boardroom looking at this landscape, I am sweating.
Oh, absolutely. It looks impossible.
You have General Dynamics owning the command backbone, BAE owning the virtual simulation, Cubic owning the live exercise tracking, and then well-funded local competitors like Tactical building the exact data pipelines you want to build.
Right.
So how does a tiny startup actually make themselves useful without trying to render billions of dollars of existing tech obsolete? I mean, where is the gap in that armor?
Well, so the gap is entirely cognitive.
Cognitive, what do you mean?
Think of it this way. All of those massive incumbents we just listed, they are incredibly good at generating the map.
Okay.
They track the lasers, they plot the coordinates, they show you exactly where things are. But none of those Canadian primes are specifically funded to build what OpSpecs calls a doctrinal layer.
The doctrinal layer. Okay, explain the mechanics of that. What does that actually mean in practice for a user?
It means moving from location to interpretation. So currently, a system will show a human analyst, say, four red dots moving down a road on a screen.
Right, just dots.
Exactly. And that analyst, who might be totally exhausted operating in a super high-stress environment, they have to mentally apply standardized NATO rules.
Because NATO has specific operational manuals for this stuff,
Yeah,
right?
manuals known as ATP 112 and ACP 125. The analyst has to use those rules to determine what those specific dots mean.
So they literally have to do the math in their head.
Exactly. They have to measure the spacing between the dots, the speed, the formation, and then manually type out this heavily formatted 20-field intelligence report
Oh, wow.
stating, this is not just four vehicles. Based on NATO doctrine, this is an armored advance in an offensive posture.
That sounds incredibly
It
tedious.
is. And OpSpecs' doctrinal layer is basically an AI system that automates that exact interpretation.
Wait, so instead of replacing the analyst's screen, they're basically acting as an automated ghostwriter for the analyst's reports.
Yes.
The incumbents provide the raw pixels, and OpSpecs provides the meaning behind those pixels.
Precisely. They recognize, look, we can't outspend General Dynamics to build a better map. So let's just build the brain that sits on top of their map.
That's brilliant. But if the incumbents own the map, how does OpSpecs actually integrate their brain into the system?
Well, the documents divide their technological arsenal into three categories: what works today, what is reachable in weeks, and then their far-off research projects.
Which is such a crucial survival tactic for any startup.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to clearly delineate between the software you can actually demo to a general today versus, the theoretical capabilities living on a slide deck.
Right. You need to show immediate value. So what's fully functioning right now is their training simulator.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's a closed-world simulator where a single operator on a laptop can dispatch virtual drones.
And as the drone sensor spots enemy assets, the system automatically groups those tanks and infantry into standard NATO formations.
It even tracks the duration of a gaze, right? Like
Right.
how long a sensor looks at a target before actually confirming it.
Yeah. And if we compare that simulator to the incumbent we mentioned earlier, BSIMS VBS, it really highlights OpSpecs' whole strategy perfectly.
Oh, so.
Well, VBS is this massive rendering engine. It handles high-fidelity physics. It calculates the ballistic trajectory of a round. It renders the wind blowing through the grass.
Very heavy computational stuff.
Exactly. And OpSpecs doesn't want to calculate gravity or draw the grass. They want to sit on top of VBS as the reasoning engine, taking all that rendered data and interpreting it doctrinally.
The rendering engine versus the reasoning engine. That makes perfect sense. But here is the piece of technology they consider reachable in weeks, and I think this is where the entire survival of the company hinges.
The bridge.
Yes, the Topcot Interop Bridge. It would be standing for cursor on target.
This bridge is honestly the technological equivalent of a master key.
Let's break down how it works, because it directly solves that iPhone analogy we started with. We know Canadian soldiers already have ATAK software on their Samsung phones.
Right.
ATAK communicates using a specific data format called XML. Think of XML like the specific grammar of a language.
Right. And usually, a new software startup tries to invent a better language entirely.
which forces the buyer to learn a completely new grammar. But with this interop bridge, OffSpex doesn't rewrite the language. They simply program their AI to output its doctrinal findings using ATAC's exact XML grammar.
It's so smart.
Yeah. So when OffSpex detects an armored advance, it translates that alert into the exact format ATAC naturally speaks and just pushes it directly to the soldier's existing phone.
It's brilliant because it completely bypasses the procurement officer's biggest objection, which is always, we are not ripping out our existing infrastructure.
Right.
OpSpecs just comes in and says, keep your infrastructure. We love your infrastructure. Our bridge just feeds it smarter data.
Now, alongside that software bridge, there's a hardware component in the documents called OpForge. And I have to admit, this part really surprised me.
Yeah, it seems a bit out of left field at first.
They're building out networks using these cheap, open-source mesh-tastic radios. These are devices like the T-Deck Pro. It basically looks like a thick calculator with the tiny screen and a keyboard.
And the mechanism behind them is fascinating. They utilize mesh networking,
Which means?
which means instead of every single radio needing to connect to a centralized cell phone tower or, a multi-million-dollar military satellite,
Right.
the radios just bounce signals off of each other. So node A talks to node C by bouncing the message through node B.
Meaning they can run completely off-grid,
Completely.
just using small solar relay nodes hung up in trees. And the startup's far-off research-grade ambitions tie right into this. They're looking at things like hybrid version 2,
Oh, that part is wild.
where live soldiers in the real world interact with AI-driven virtual adversaries,
Okay.
or these drone vision pipelines using edge AI.
Yeah, where a tiny computer attached to the actual camera recognizes the specific class of a vehicle in real time without having to send the video back to some server.
Pushing the computational power right to the edge of the battlefield. But look, I need to push back on the business logic here for a second.
Sure.
Building hardware is notoriously expensive, and hardware supply chains routinely kill software startups.
It's a huge risk, yeah.
Plus, we already established that Cubic holds a massive contract to track live soldiers using highly advanced lasers and sensor harnesses. Why on earth would OffSpex burn its limited startup runway building solar relays and open-source mesh-tastic radios? It feels like a distraction.
It does seem like that, but it really comes down to the bureaucratic friction of traditional hardware.
What do you mean?
And you're absolutely right that Cubic owns the high-end tracking,
Yeah.
but Cubic Instruments massive formal training centers. If a company commander just wants to take 50 soldiers out into the woods for a quick 3-day tactical exercise, the administrative overhead required to check out millions of dollars of traditional classified tracking gear from the armory is
Oh,
paralyzing.
I'm sure. There are probably 40 different forms to fill out in triplicate.
Exactly. OpForge provides a decentralized alternative. Using a handful of these open source radios that cost, what, a few hundred dollars each?
Yeah, they're super cheap.
A unit can set up their own localized off-grid tracking network in minutes. And here is the real mechanism at play. Once those soldiers are generating live position data on that cheap mesh network, OpSpecs runs that data through their AI doctrinal layer.
Ah, I see it now. So the cheap hardware is basically just a Trojan horse.
Bingo.
They get the small units hooked on the AI interpretation during weekend exercises, which builds this ground-up demand.
Exactly.
When those soldiers go to the massive Cubic instrumented exercises later, they're going to ask their commanders why their billion-dollar system isn't as smart as the cheap radios they used last month.
Right. You bypass the top-down procurement gridlock by generating bottom-up user dependency.
That's so clever. But having a clever piece of technology is great. How do you actually extract money from a government entity?
Ah, the million-dollar question, or billion-dollar, really.
Right. The documents outline three distinct B2B procurement strategies. And honestly, this is where it becomes incredibly relevant to anyone listening who works in enterprise sales.
Definitely. Strategy number one is what they call the de-risker plug-in model, and it leans heavily on that TAC XML bridge we just discussed.
I imagine the primary advantage here is purely behavioral. You aren't forcing an operator, specifically JTAC operators. Those are the specialists who call in close air support.
Right.
You aren't forcing them to minimize the app they trust and learn a new startup's buggy beta interface.
Exactly. The documents mention these operators already use a digitally aided plugin for ATAC called DocOS.
Okay.
So the muscle memory of looking at a specialized plugin within their primary app is already totally established.
You reduce the cognitive friction to almost zero.
Precisely. But the inherent risk in the strategy is that you don't own the platform. You're essentially just a tenant.
Oh.
If the Canadian Armed Forces decide 5 years from now to completely abandon ATAC for some totally new system, your entire delivery mechanism is wiped out overnight.
You're at their mercy. Which leads directly into the second strategy they outline.
Yeah.
Subcontracting under the primes.
This is a classic move.
We saw this in the documents with teaming arrangements between companies like Kalian and ADGA, or CAE's absolute dominance in training programs. The Canadian government is preparing for the Land Vehicle Crew Training System, or LVCTS.
Yet another acronym.
Yep. But this is a program that will dictate vehicle simulation for decades.
And the mechanism of subcontracting is crucial to understand here. If a prime contractor like CAE wins the LVCTS bid to build the massive physical vehicle simulators, OpSpecs does not try to bid against them.
That would be suicide.
Completely. Instead, OpSpecs approaches CAE and says, "Hey, your physical simulator is world class. But your software doesn't output NATO ATP 112 doctrinal reports natively. Let us provide that specific subsystem."
It's the Intel chip inside the Dell computer model.
That's exactly it.
You ride the massive decadal budgets of the prime contractor.
You do, but again, there's a disadvantage. And that's a severe loss of operational control.
Because you aren't the one managing the timeline.
Right. You become a puzzle piece in a much larger bureaucratic game. If the prime contractor's master bid gets delayed in government committee for 3 years...
Your startup's revenue is delayed for 3 years.
Yeah, and you have absolutely zero leverage to speed it up.
That is a terrifying position for a startup that has to make payroll next month.
It really is.
Which brings us to the third strategy. The documents present an approach we can basically call the Canadian content wedge. And it's a fascinating lesson in using a competitor's massive scale against them.
I love this part. To understand this wedge, you have to look at the U.S. heavyweight in this space, which is Anduril's Lattice system.
Right.
Lattice is an AI-enabled tactical awareness platform, and the U.S. Army just recently awarded Anduril an enterprise contract worth up to $20 billion.
$20 billion. That's with a B. How does a tiny startup team based in Montreal even begin to fight a $20 billion Silicon Valley giant?
Well, by weaponizing international export laws.
Wow. Okay, explain that.
So, Anduril's system is incredibly advanced, but because it is an American defense product, it's tightly bound by U.S. ITAR regulations.
ITAR standing for International Traffic in Arms Regulations.
Right.
And what does that friction actually look like for a foreign buyer like Canada?
It means that even a close ally like Canada faces immense bureaucratic hurdles just to buy or update the software.
Really? Just for an update?
Oh, yeah. If a Canadian unit needs a custom software tweak, it might require months of U.S. State Department clearance before Anduril is legally allowed to share that updated code.
That's agonizing.
And furthermore, Lattice is built around U.S. military structures. It's not natively encoded for the specific NATO doctrine that Canada relies on.
And so OpSpecs counters this by just aggressively playing the local card.
Exactly.
They emphasize their open source firmware, their use of Western sourced hardware components, and crucially, their Canadian origin.
They pitch themselves not as a black box heavily restricted by Washington, but as a transparent, locally built system that speaks fluent NATO.
They literally turn Anduril's massive American footprint into a liability for the Canadian procurement officer.
It's a textbook example of asymmetric business warfare. You find the one metric where the giant size slows them down, and you make that the deciding factor of the sale.
And this really brings us to the core takeaway for you, our listener.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you care about the procurement strategy of some niche defense startup? Because the mechanics of selling into an entrenched bureaucracy are completely universal. Whether you are pitching a tactical AI layer to a military general, or you're just trying to convince your corporate executive board to adopt a new project management tool.
The psychological landscape is identical.
Exactly. If you walk into a boardroom and tell leadership they need to scrap the ridiculously expensive IT infrastructure they just spent 3 years integrating, they will throw you out.
You're attacking their past decisions, and bureaucracies inherently defend their sunk costs.
Yes. Instead, you adopt the OpSpec strategy. You tell leadership that your new tool is the exact plugin required to make their expensive, frustrating legacy system actually fulfill its original promise.
You don't threaten the incumbent infrastructure. You validate it by acting as the brain that makes it smarter.
It's the subtle difference between threatening a revolution and offering an optimization.
And large organizations will almost always fund the optimization.
So, to quickly recap the ground we've covered today, we explored a multi-billion-dollar landscape of entrenched defense primes here in Canada.
Which is massive.
We examined how a startup identified a highly specific gap, a doctrinal layer that interprets data rather than just displaying it, to actually stand out.
Right.
And we broke down the mechanics of B2B procurement, from leveraging existing software grammar like XML to subcontracting under giants to using local export agility against massive foreign competitors.
It really is a comprehensive masterclass in how disruptive innovation actually forces its way into the most rigid, risk-averse markets on Earth.
Really?
But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a thought drawn from a very, very subtle detail hidden in these internal documents.
Well, please share it.
Under their far-off research goals, OpSpecs mentions building what they call allied doctrine packs.
Allied doctrine packs. Okay.
Yeah. The underlying premise is that different nations, even when operating within the same NATO coalition, have slightly different rules of engagement and nuanced doctrinal interpretations.
Right. The cultures are different.
So the software would allow you to swap out the standard NATO rules for specific US, British, or French variants. Which, I mean, from a software engineering standpoint, that makes perfect sense. You just swap out the rulebook file.
Mechanically, yes, but it raises a really profound question about the future of joint coalition operations.
Okay, where are you going with this?
Imagine a scenario 5 or 10 years from now. You have two allied armies operating side by side in the exact same sector.
Okay.
They're both feeding the exact same live drone video feed into their respective tactical AI systems. But because they're running different doctrinal rule packs, one nation's AI interprets the movement of vehicles and categorizes it on the screen as a defensive retreating posture.
And the other?
The other nation's AI looks at the exact same kixels, applies a slightly different rule pack, and flashes a red alert categorizing it as an offensive strike.
Oh, wow.
Right.
If the AI is doing the reasoning and the underlying rules of reasoning are mathematically different, how do human commanders in a unified coalition even agree on reality when their screens are telling them two completely different stories about the exact same event?
Exactly. We rely on these systems to provide objective clarity, but an algorithm is only as objective as the specific doctrine encoded into it.
Yeah.
If the underlying doctrines diverge, the digital reality diverges, even if the physical facts on the ground remain totally identical.
That fundamentally changes what it means to share a tactical picture. That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep looking closely at the systems around you. Think about the infrastructure you interact with every day and keep questioning the information landscape. We will catch you next time.